you know, be culturally relevant in classrooms and get young people excited about, you know, rap music that they're already invested in, you know. So when I saw Kendrick Lamar release To Pimp a Butterfly in 2015, there were so many concepts and themes that were relevant to, you know, novels that I was already teaching, like Toni Morrison's novel, The Bluest Eye. So it was a perfect opportunity to just kind of like enhance the curriculum that I was already teaching. And my students responded really well.
I mean, of course, I was kidding when I said they could have cared less. Could you imagine Kendrick Lamar walking into the school? How did the kids act?
Yeah, what was incredible about it was that he was really a student that day when he came in. You know, he was there to kind of really listen to our students perform their work. And he, like a good teacher, was just really leaning in, listen to what they were saying.
So what was your response yesterday when you heard that Dan had won the Pulitzer?
Just thrilled and really just, you know, like humbled that, you know, my students and I were able to, you know, play a part and bring some awareness to other educators and teachers around the world that, you know, his work can be educational and rap music and hip hop culture can be used to, you know, teach and learn. So, you know, I thought it was a long time coming. It was well deserved. You know, while hip hop in many ways has been very anti-institutional, it's nice to get the institutional recognition that I feel like is very deserved.
The Pulitzer Committee said Dam was, quote, a virtuosic song collection unified by its vernacular authenticity and rhythmic dynamism that offers affecting vignettes capturing the complexity of modern African-American life. So talk about how he has changed the landscape. You also have now Beyoncé, headlining Coachella, the first black woman to headline Coachella. This is really late in time. You have Nina Simone getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, of course, posthumously.
Right, in the same year when Black Panther is breaking all kinds of records in the box office, too. So it's an incredible year, I think. But with Kendrick's music in particular, you know, I feel like it's part of a long lineage in hip-hop. And if you listen to that album in particular, Damn, the masterful storytelling and command of language, you know, it's incredible. You know, sometimes educators will think, well, how do you use hip hop in a classroom, you know? And you think about people like Shakespeare, those people were incredibly versatile with what they did with language. You know, Chaucer, you know, they were inventing words, they were inventing language, you know, they used the double negative. People don't know that, right? So when you think about MCs, modern day MCs, right, these are people with incredible linguistic versatility like Kendrick Lamar.
I want to go to a video from NPR of Kendrick Lamar going to your high tech high school where you teach in North Bergen, New Jersey. After visiting with your class, he performed at the school-wide assembly.
This album wasn't made for, I didn't think I made it for a 16-year-old, you know? So when a 16-year-old is intrigued by it, it lets me know how so far advanced as a society we actually are, you know? And that inspired me on a whole nother level. I always get people like my parents or, you know, older adults saying, this is great, you know, you have a message, you have themes, you have different genres of music, but to get a kid actually telling me this, it's a different type of feeling. I don't think nobody in the world can belittle, you know, their humor, their smarts, nothing, because they're highly intelligent. And walking into their classroom, it just proved me right. I'm at the preacher's
door. Yes, there he was at your high school, at High Tech High School in North Bergen, New Jersey. What was his reaction to coming to the school?
One of the things that really made an impression on all of us was when he spoke to the whole student body. He said that this was the best accolade he ever received. And this was at the time when he just recently got the key to Los Angeles, and he was named a generational icon. And he's telling a whole student body of high school students, this is the best accolade I could ever receive, is making an impact on young people.
So talk more about hip-hop ed, Brian.
Yeah, so for any teachers out there, educators listening, you know, we have a Twitter channel chat on Tuesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. with hashtag Hip Hop Ed. And we talk about the intersections of hip hop, education, pop culture. We share resources, ideas, lesson plans. And we're really, you know, just it's a professional development every Tuesday night and a resource for educators who often can become very isolated in classrooms, you know, in the way that public school works. So it's an incredible resource. And, you know, the Hip Hop Ed movement is led by Dr. Chris Emden from Teachers College, Columbia University, but also just teachers in classrooms doing the work every day. And they just released a book, a compilation, Hip Hop Ed, the first part in a compilation. And it's incredible. There's just amazing teachers and researchers out there, from Dr. Lauren Kelly at Rutgers to Mike Dondo in the University of Wisconsin to Dr. Edmund Ajapong at Seton Hall, and Dr. Ian Levy at UMass. Just incredible people who are doing great, great work. And that's my team, the Hip Hop Ed team. We're just some brilliant, brilliant people who really care about kids and are trying to do good work in schools.
Your kids' response yesterday, mm-hmm. when it was announced that Kendrick Lamar won the Pulitzer?
You know, I haven't really talked to them much about it yet because I haven't been in yet today. But when I go in, you know, we're gonna talk about it and discuss it because, you know, this is what we do. We talk about these you know, recognitions and these accolades that these are artists that they're already listening to, they're already invested in. So when we you know, do this kind of work in schools, it's about being culturally responsive and culturally relevant.
Brian Mooney, New Jersey high school teacher Kendrick Lamar went to his school. In 2015, High Tech High School in North Bergen, New Jersey, to perform for the kids. As Brian Mooney participates in Hip Hop Ed. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be speaking in Lincoln, Nebraska on Friday night. That's Friday night at the Rococo Theater. Check our website for more details, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Nat Needham. We also have a social media fellowship paid internship for a year. Check our website at democracynow.org.
Maria is a model of efficiency. With her life, she has to be.
Bob, you get the door. I'll get the baby. And a fresh blouse for work.
So when tax time rolls around, Maria knows how to get the job done with a minimum of fuss and muss. She goes to IRS.gov.
My kind of place.
It has easy online tools, like calculators for figuring your withholding and to see if you qualify for some of the many 2009 tax credits. It tells you if you're eligible for free file and how to e-file your tax return, too.
No paperwork. That works for me.
If you owe money and can't pay, you can set up a payment plan. And if you're getting a refund, you can track it online. IRS.gov. It's a real time saver. And who couldn't use more of that?
Buddy! Buddy! Come back here!
And you are listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. 2009? Yeah, okay. It's time now, though, for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, Kyle, you're back.
Yes, I'm here.
Wow.
How you doing, E?
I'm doing pretty good. No, not bad. Sorry for the late start, people. Democracy Now! Is a little little long in the tongue tonight, but it's okay. You know, it's important. We have to hear these things.
The new furniture makes up for it.
The new furniture does make up. What new furniture?
These chairs. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. We are sitting in new chairs, aren't
look
we?
Look how reclined.
Actually, we're sitting in chairs. That's
comfortable
that's the news.
I look.
We usually have to stand up and lean against the wall.
Yeah.
But did you hear that 2009? I think somebody seriously needs to go through our public service announcements and weed out the ones that are almost 10 years old.
That's a project.
Yeah, I'll say. But 2000, you know, the IRS could have made a public service announcement that didn't have a year mentioned in it, and then it would have been good for all time. But they had to mention 2009, makes us look like idiots.
Well,
it's April. Well, it's not April 15th. It's April 17th, but it's technically the deadline because yesterday was some kind of holiday. I figured it would be the right thing to do to play an IRS public service announcement. Look what I did. I made a monkey out of myself.
They're probably busy right now, but I bet if we contacted the IRS and said, hey, could we get some fresh PSAs? They would probably supply us with them, and I bet you they wouldn't be out of date or even mention a date. I bet they figured that out.
Get in your car right now and drive down to, what is it, Holtzville?
Hamburg? I don't know
where. One of those places, one of those H-towns, and ask them. They could give it to you, and you can be back by 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're late today. I know
but they
that.
Might be busy. I mean, they might be busy.
They're busy. Know. But they also want to get you out of their hair, so they'll give you the public service announcements. You can be, well, okay, maybe for next week.
Speaking of public service announcements, I see you have some news stories.
I have stories about the IRS actually, because as I said, today is tax day.
How'd you get that wheelbarrow in here?
I have my connections.
That's a lot of stories.
This is really the most important one. The IRS website to make payments went down earlier today, but you still have to pay somehow. I don't know exactly how you're supposed to do it. Now, the IRS didn't have an explanation for this failure. It appears, based on a message on their website, the online payment system became unavailable at 2:50 in the morning. Now, the initial message about the outage probably confused visitors a little bit. It said that the payment service, IRS Direct Pay, was experiencing both an unplanned and planned outage at the same time. The headline said the service would be available again on December 31st, 9,999. So they could have to wait a few thousand years to use the system. But the message text said the service would resume on September 22nd, 2016. So if you, depending on which part of the message you read, you either missed it or it's coming in a few thousand years.
Give them a break. They use very old computers, and it's they really only work one way. They're not that flashy. So
you were trying to design an announcement to confuse people on April Fool's Day, you could not have beaten what the IRS did just by themselves.
Yeah.
Without even trying. They've since updated their website to say it's temporarily unavailable. So the IRS adds, though, note that your tax payment is due, although IRS Direct Pay may not be available. So how in God's name are you supposed to pay if your payment option isn't available?
Go back to the tried and true mail or in-person methods, I guess.
Well, it's fun to watch these governmental agencies struggle with technology. But sometimes we're the victims of it when that happens. So good luck if you have to pay. Wow, 9,999. How do you even get an error like that? Are they running, UNIVAC systems? What are they doing?
Probably Windows NT or something.
Wow. Oh, speaking of technology, our web browser finally loaded. It took 10 minutes to load the web browser on this Mac here. Wow. You have to buy a new Mac every year or it slows down to the extent where it takes 10 minutes to load a browser. That's always been the case.
That's an interesting thing. You don't upgrade with software. They just sort of improve browsers as they develop the hardware.
The way it works is you update with software, but then the software won't run on your hardware, so you have to update the hardware to keep up with the software, and then by that time there's new software that comes out that you have to upgrade on your new hardware, and by that time the hardware can't keep up with the new software and you have to go through it all over again.
Yeah, and get counseling.
Uh-huh. And that's what it's like being a Mac customer.
See your therapist.
Mm-hmm. And Windows, pretty much the same thing. Especially, yeah. Especially Windows 10.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Except you can't really talk to anyone about it.
No, no. The support groups don't really do it justice. You heard about what happened at Starbucks, right?
I did. I heard bits and pieces of it, but I have the gist of what went on, and I've, you know, some feelings about it.
For those listening in the future who don't know what we're talking about, the incident took place in Philadelphia, where basically two black guys got arrested for sitting in Starbucks. That's really what happened. They were waiting for a friend. They sat at a table, We're waiting for a friend, so they didn't order anything. They one of them asked to use the bathroom and was told that it's for paying customers only. And they, I guess, accepted that or said that we're waiting for somebody. And apparently the manager took that to be a good excuse to call the cops. The cops came and arrested the two guys because they refused to leave. There's just so much here, so much wrong with this scenario. I don't know where to begin. But one thing, you know, I told you about this a couple of days ago because you hadn't heard about it. And the first thing you said was pretty much my conclusion as well, which was that this is not really on Starbucks. And the reason why, people were occupying that particular Starbucks, and that's understandable, but to chant that the company is anti-black, I don't know. Point to something. Point to a policy that says, yeah, if someone is black sitting at a table and not ordering, that's a problem. Or repeated incidents. This can happen anywhere. Okay, this could happen at any coffee shop, any retail outlet. It can happen anywhere in this country because systemically, the country is racist. Yes. Whether you can point to Starbucks and say it's all Starbucks, I don't think that's fair. And I think Starbucks has responded quickly. In fact, they just announced today they're going to be closing 8,000 of their stores on May 29th in the afternoon. That's a Tuesday, by the way, for racial bias education.
Whoa.
Yeah, 8,000 stores. What's weird is that there's 14,000 stores in the U.S. So I'm not exactly sure who's going to not have to close.
We know the stores. We know. Oh, we all know.
Yeah, the thing is, we don't know. We have no clue.
It's true.
And that is something that, we always have to remind ourselves that we can sympathize. We can say, boy, this sucks, but you never know. And you never will. No matter how hard you try, when you're white, you can never know what it's like to be black. And as long as you understand that, I think you'll be all right. You know, I think you'll be able to see what's going on in the world and maybe use your privilege to help a little bit and make things better. But never make the mistake that you can live that life because you can't. And if you try and make assumptions, it just causes resentment. You know, it's like men trying to understand what it's like to be a woman. You can't do it. You can't understand the rampant sexism and victimization that happens on a daily basis. You can make it better. You can sympathize. You can spread awareness, but you can never know what it's like. So let's just get that clear, you know, for starters. But anyway, all that said, they're going to be closing May 29th for this racial bias education. That's great. That's wonderful. But why just Starbucks? You know, it should be everywhere. And it should also be with the cops. Now, the cops are saying they did nothing wrong. In fact, the police commissioner of Philadelphia is saying his cops did nothing wrong and that he's black, so he understands it. You know what? Even if you are black, you don't always understand it, and I don't think this guy gets it. I don't think this guy realizes that would never have happened to white people. And, you know, you can't deny that. You know that would never have happened with white people. And to say just because, you know, you share the same racial composition as the victims in this particular case, that you get it and that there's no way this could be a racist act is ignorant, because it absolutely is. And for cops to come in there and have to leave with two people in handcuffs tells me something about the cops, that they don't know any other solution. They don't know that they can have a conversation, they can resolve issues. When cops are called in, it's not to drag people away, it's to resolve the problem. And I don't see them doing that very often. they, you know, occasionally they do, and they deserve credit when they do, but all too often they don't.
Yeah, they're picking sides with, like, deathly consequence. But I think what's also sort of the underlying thing here is to be considerate of the impact of whiteness or the impact of masculinity or dominance, whether it's based on gender or class, you know, certain neighborhoods being able to wield, you know, power by calling, you know, as a business owner and in this case, a manager or whomever was responsible for escalating to that degree. And then, of course, the police not being considerate of misunderstanding and clearing the situation up as like sort of a mediator. Because it really was sort of absurd and endemic of like more the society that we were living in, as you said. Because I think my immediate thought was that Starbucks, you know, probably does more for black folks and than a lot of companies when you think about the supply chains that they're involved in and the sorts of communities that they're able to provide jobs, you know, for. I mean, I don't know. It's to condemn them up and down is to, I think, be overlooking the greater societal sort of problem there. And anyway, I think it's just jumpy people. Don't be jumpy, white people, you know? Like, why so jumpy? Like, in your little Starbucks, people coming in and hanging out is kind of what Starbucks is about these days. It's an example of people just being inconsiderate of their fellow citizens their ability to act and be equal.
I try to avoid the comment boards whenever possible. But sometimes I, you know, look at them just for amusement, and it amuses me no end to see all the undoubtedly white people saying that, you know, this never happened to me and I never caused any problems. And when a police officer tells you to do something, you do it. And no. We're not their damn soldiers, okay? They don't command us to march in step, okay? They're supposed to be there to basically enforce the law and treat people with fairness and justly. And when that does not happen, you do not have to fall into step and simply obey their orders, like you know, you're obeying your sergeant or something like that. No, the cops have to obey orders because they're the ones in that job. But if a cop tells you to do something that is wrong, absolutely not. You don't obey that. You don't just, you know, leave because he doesn't like the color of your skin or whatever reason they decide is now. You might have to pay the consequences. In this particular case, the people paid the consequences, but the consequences were completely unjust. And this is the result of it. And to say, okay, I've got the quote here from police commissioner, Richard Ross. These officers did absolutely nothing wrong. They followed policy. They did what they were supposed to do. Okay, you know what? That's wrong then. That is wrong if that is your policy.
Yeah.
Continuing, they were professional in all their dealings with these gentlemen, and instead they got the opposite back. What are you talking about? They got the opposite back. What does that mean? People are upset that somebody got arrested for nothing? You want to be respected for that? You want to be respected? This is how you get respected. You go into a place where there's a conflict of some sort, and you walk out of the place when there is no conflict, and you're not towing people behind you in cuffs, and you haven't shot anybody. That is worthy of respect, all right? And that is what I expect cops to be able to do. That's, you know, it's a hard job. It's not something anybody can do, but you need to be, you know, part counselor, part paramedic and part protector, all these things wrapped up in one. Yeah, it's a tough job. It's supposed to be a tough job, and you don't get to be a hero and make it an easy job. You know, where you just fire first and ask questions later, or arrest anybody who just happens not to obey your particular order at the moment. That's not what being a cop is all about. So yeah, it was wrong, and I think that's where you have to. Put the majority of the blame, because they didn't have to resolve it in that particular manner. Now, Ross, the police commissioner, is black. He said he was aware of issues of implicit bias, unconscious discrimination based on race. He did not say whether he believed it applied in this case. He said the incident underscores the need for more body-worn cameras, to present different perspectives of police responses. The officers were not wearing cameras. And of course, you know, when they do wear cameras, they often turn them off. But regardless, you had so many witnesses there. You have things on cell phones that people are recording. You have all the perspective you need to see what happened here. And clearly what happened was not the right way to resolve the situation. And the fact that cops cannot ever admit this, and that their rank and file, the other cops and their superiors, and just people who support the law enforcement community in general, can never admit when they mess up. That is a problem, and that's something that I think really needs to be resolved. That's where the focus should be. Starbucks, yeah, you know, and Starbucks gets it too. They get it even more than what we're saying here right now, because they're basically saying that while this is the case of one employee. In fact, I've got a good quote here from the chief operating officer, Rosalind Brewer. She talked about the company's call for unconscious bias training. And said it's a teachable moment for all of us. She said that as an African-American executive with a 23-year-old son, she found the cell phone videos taken of Thursday's incident painful to watch. Listen to what she says. It would be easy for us to say that this was a one-employee situation, but I have to tell you, it's time for us to, myself included, take personal responsibility here and do the best we can to make sure we do everything we can. Bravo. That is it. Why couldn't the cops say that? Are the cops above everything, where there's no racism at all? There's no, and it doesn't matter if you're black or white. You can be racist against black people and be a black person yourself. All right. There are so many. Trump has taught us that, if nothing else, the amount of racist black people who support Trump is simply mind boggling. But they exist. They're out there, and they will throw their own people under the bus at a moment's notice. It's sickening, but it's true, and we need to confront these issues. So I'm hoping all this comes out. All this can be part of the conversation. But let's not just point the finger at the one place where it happened or the one chain where it happened, because it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, and we have to all collectively be able to read a situation, but police especially, it's their job, and not get tunnel vision in the moment for one characterization of how things went. You know, they're supposed to get the entirety of the story from witnesses and people around, and then make a judgment, you know, and have that presence of mind to assess it and evaluate, you know, what really is going on. That's not really happening. It's more reflexive.
I have to think the number of times that I've been to a place like that, not necessarily that particular chain, but just coffee shop in general, where I hang out for a while before buying anything sometimes. If I'm meeting somebody, or after a hurricane, for instance, you go down to a place that has Wi-Fi, and you plug in, and you use the bathroom and all kinds of things without buying anything. You know, eventually you do. It all comes back in the end. But I never felt like I was, in any way looked upon with suspicion, or that I was going to be threatened with arrest or anything like that. That's how alien it is, that I can feel that. And yet there are people who, the only difference being the complexion of their skin, who feel completely differently and are treated completely differently. That's something we still have to wrap our heads around.
Yeah.
It's sad. It really is. But May 29th, that's the day that Starbucks learns how to be racially tolerant. But hopefully everybody else is able to latch onto that as well.
It'll be good for them. Hopefully they can share that program and response with other corporations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what else is going on? North and South Korea might be coming to terms finally, to end the war that started in the 1950s.
That's cool.
Yeah, now there's a summit coming up. You know about the one with Trump.
Yes,
May. But there's also one coming up with South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And that meeting, which is taking place on April 27th, could result in an historic announcement, with the sides declaring an end to the 68-year-old war on the peninsula.
That means no more DMZ, right?
I don't know. Well, let's look into that a little bit. Now, the war, while it hasn't been, MASH style for the last 60 or so years, it never ended. real peace ever declared. So technically, they've still been at war all this time. That news follows weeks of planning between the South and North. It kicked off with a thawing of previously tense relations during the Winter Olympics. And since then, Kim has expressed an unprecedented willingness to talk to the South, a desire to talk about denuclearization with the U.S. He traveled outside his country for the first time since assuming power in 2011. He took that train over to China. North Korea has also seen an influx of South Korean visitors, including diplomatic delegations, Korean pop bands. Kim himself even sat in on a performance that he really liked from South Korean bands. We've been talking about this for years, that all it takes is dialogue, is engaging. I went to North Korea. I met people there. I see how eager they are to prove themselves extremely talented and gracious hosts and all kinds of things like that. And sometimes all you have to do is listen to people and not just be there to condemn and to criticize and to threaten. And that is all we've been doing. And if there's one thing, and I think there really is only one thing I can say about Trump, it's that through his simplicity and naive way of dealing with situations, this is one situation that could benefit from that. And by him saying, yeah, sure, I'll meet with the guy, why not? Something no other president would do, because they know a thing or two about what it means to lead the most powerful country in the world. But by him saying that, that could actually turn the tables. Now, what will be the result of that? God only knows. I'm afraid to even think about it. But it can get the dialogue going. And that is really the important thing here, to get that dialogue going.
It can break through the ice, so to speak. And uh-huh. And you would, I guess, then only hope that the delegations and learned folks who would be planning and helping implement whatever changes or oversight or agreement they come to are very capable and can execute the spirit of these negotiations in a succinct and really meaningful way.
Yeah, and I really hope that something happens, something changes, something has to change. And if it takes the craziness of Trump, where people don't know what he's going to do next, to actually get people to start talking amongst themselves because they realize this guy is unhinged and could destroy the entire region, okay, you know what? I'll take it. For that one part of the world, this works. Everything else is a complete disaster. But it's up to the Koreans, the South Koreans and North Koreans, to work this out. And I think they have taken tremendous steps. And don't forget, Kim Jong-un, who made that New Year's address and was conciliatory and opened the door to participating in the Olympics. And that was a turning point as well. That was probably what started this whole thing off. So, yeah, Trump will take credit for it. And he deserves some credit if things do change. But he does not certainly deserve the lion's share of it, because that is the willingness of the Korean people to talk to each other. And once we get that, I think we'll see some real progress, real advances. And imagine if the two sides can actually appreciate each other and learn from each other and improve the quality of life. That would be amazing.
I think that's just, you know, you said it, but it we can imagine, but we're going to have to start to, because it's very, very likely it's going to happen, or it's going to present itself here in May. So we'll all be watching dutifully.
You have a bulleton there.
I didn't want to interrupt you. This is a great conversation, but I did want to mention we are in Radiothon, Spring Radiothon here at WSB Stony Brook.
What does that mean?
That means you can call 631-632-6901. That's 631-632-WSB? No?
631-632. Look at a touch tone pad. Does 6901 spell WUSB, Kyle?
Maybe.
It doesn't. The zero doesn't even have a letter attached.
That's if
to it.
You want to call and tell us what you're growing in your garden later. No, but
don't call that second number. Call 6901.
631-632-6901. If you're on campus, just 26901. And donate. You know, and really, you could donate time. You can donate you know, ideas or all kinds of things, but money really helps too, and that is something that will thank you with all kinds of exciting things, of which you might pick at the $75 level a WSB Space logo sweatshirt. $35 will get you a mug.
Logo?
space, it says. I don't know if that's right. That could be a typo, but I'm pretty sure that says space. And I believe it has some sort of planetary or other aeronautical type celestial bodies. Okay, yeah, that kind of thing.
We're on a planet, so and I can identify.
You could get this sweatshirt in a variety of sizes and put it on your celestial body. Ha, huh, there.
Wow. 631-632-6901. That's our telephone
number. So anyway, I just want to make that announcement. We've got community members here at the station waiting by the phone for your call, and it would really make a big difference. Any level, $5, $10, up to $20, $35. You might do it 90.1.
Yeah, I'm looking at that.
107.30.
The 90.1 club, look at this. You get the USB space logo canvas tote bag and a CD of your choice. For a pledge of $90.10. But you can also pledge for our new frequency of 107.3. You can join the 107.3 club, $107.30. And you can get one of each of these items, or three of any of them, I guess. A sweatshirt, a T-shirt, a USB cap, a WUSB mug, all kinds of things. There's all sorts of possibilities. 631-632-6901 is our phone number. And keep in mind, it's calls like yours that keep this place going. What we've accomplished in the last couple of years is simply staggering, because if you listen back, and we have all the archives of our show dating back to 2003 on 2600.com/offthewall, you will hear how our old studio was completely falling apart, and now we are in a completely new studio. Most of that is due to the volunteer work of the people here at this radio station who built this place, and it's a state-of-the-art studio now. We have all kinds of production facilities that we didn't have before, and it just keeps getting better and better. Things work. You know, we're able to do things now that we weren't able to do before, and that, in large part, is due to donations that we have gotten, both in donations in time and donations in finances. So your call, 631-632-6901, adds to that, and that allows us to do more in the future. Hey, we volunteered a hell of a lot of time over the past couple of years encoding all of our compact discs that we basically were moving from the old studios, something like, I think, 75,000, 100,000. I don't even know. We'll count them in the end. This week, at some point, we are going to reach the end. After more than 2 years of encoding CDs, we're going to finally finish the encoding project. And that means we'll have a huge library at the disposal of the radio station. But it's that spirit of diving into something just to make the place better. Now, whether that's writing a check, whether that is donating time or resources or skills, it's up to you how you do it. But we all do this together, and that's what makes us WUSB. That's what makes us strong. 631-632-6901.
Call now. Support Radiothon, Spring Radiothon, here at the radio station, and we'll have more and more of these exciting changes and capital improvements and just more interesting shows and capabilities here, whether it's sports or concert events and new shows and news and information or other interesting genres of music more frequently. All that stuff is supported by your donations, and we would really appreciate your participation. A strong showing of support would really make this Radiothon a success for everyone and for you, the listener.
And unlike some of those other stations that you might hear asking for your support, it really makes a difference with us. One person calling right now, one person making that phone light up, would make us bounce up and down with happiness. Yeah, that's what it takes. And you'll see that. You do not see that at any NPR station. I'll tell you that right now, because they don't even see the phone banks. All right, it's somewhere else, and they have minions that answer all their phones and send out their tote bags and various things like that. In our particular case, it's very much community driven, and we see what's going on, and we're a part of everything that happens in this place. 631-632-6901. Please make that phone line light up and pledge whatever you can afford, whether it's a $25 pledge, 90.1, 107.3. And, you know, you can pay over time. There's all kinds of different ways to do this.
Yeah, volunteers will help you sort all that out. They'll take your information. And if you want to know exactly what various pledge
levels
provide.
Look, the phone's ringing.
Is it?
The phone's ringing.
All right, I'm jumping.
Wow.
I'm jumping.
Okay.
Okay, stop. As I was saying, they'll answer your questions. If you want a specific item or you want to know more about the various levels, they will be happy to answer your questions and take your pledge.
That's right. 631-632-6901. Yes, as that phone is picked up, and thank you very much for that caller who called in. And if you really want to cause a commotion down in the tally room, someone else give a call, 631-632-6901, and people will fall over themselves to pick up that phone. Thank you. Thank you for the person calling in. It matters. It really, truly matters. And a special thank you to the person calling in right now. Kyle, I've got a story. I didn't tell you about this story because I wanted to surprise you with it. Because,
okay.
It was certainly a surprise to me.
I like surprises.
Yeah, well, you might not like this one. Because, again, scientists accidentally create mutant... Okay, any
Wait, what?
Any headline that begins, scientists accidentally create mutant, usually doesn't end well. But this one just might. This one just might be something that that might change things. Scientists accidentally create mutant enzyme. Is that any better?
Oh, I think I know this story.
Well, don't give it away. I want
no,
to surprise you.
I'm surprised.
Well,
I'm surprised.
Be surprised. Don't have any knowledge that you're not supposed to have yet.
Okay, I'm getting ready to be surprised.
Don't you hate it when you try to surprise somebody and they already know the surprise?
All right, go on.
Scientists accidentally create mutant enzyme that eats plastic bottles.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, scientists have basically created a mutant enzyme that breaks down plastic drinks bottles by accident. This breakthrough could help solve the global plastic pollution crisis by enabling for the first time the full recycling of bottles.
Woo-hoo.
This comes from The Guardian over in the UK. Now, the new research was spurred by the discovery in 2016 of the first bacterium that had naturally evolved to eat plastic at a waste dump in Japan. Now, scientists have now revealed the detailed structure of the crucial enzyme produced by the bug. The international team then tweaked the enzyme to see how it evolved, but tests showed they had inadvertently made the molecule even better at breaking down the PET plastic. PET stands for polyethylene terephthalate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what PET stands for. You see it written on your bottles.
PET.
Yeah. So basically making it even better at breaking down the PET plastic used for soft drink bottles. What actually turned out was we improved the enzyme, which was a bit of a shock, said Professor John McGeehan at the University of Portsmouth, UK, who led the research. It's great and a real finding. I love when scientists are surprised.
Yeah.
You know? I've seen said many times, like the greatest scientific advances are not prefaced by somebody saying "Eureka," they're prefaced by somebody saying "That's funny."
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah,
wow. Why'd that do that?
Exactly. I love that feeling. And you can bet here at Stony Brook, at this university, that happens a few times a day. That's a scientist somewhere saying, "That shouldn't happen. What's going on here?" Yeah, the mutant enzyme takes a few days to start breaking down the plastic, which is far faster than the centuries it takes in the oceans.
Yep.
The researchers are optimistic this can be speeded up even further and become a viable large-scale process. What we're hoping to do is use this enzyme to turn this plastic back into its original components so we can literally recycle it back to plastic. It means we won't need to dig up any more oil. And fundamentally, it should reduce the amount of plastic in the environment. Now, how many plastic bottles do you think are sold each minute around the world?
Millions. Carl Sagan numbers.
1 million. 1 million.
Okay.
Yeah, 1 million every minute around the globe. And with just 14% of them recycled, many of them end up in the oceans where they polluted even the remotest parts, harming marine life, potentially people who eat seafood. It's extremely resistant to degradation. It's horrible to even think about this,
but to
think that there's a solution is amazing.
Yeah, these like sorts of things where you're using liquids and natural sort of organisms to that are specialized to resolve these or mitigate some of these environmental disasters, I think, are really exciting technologies. It's a form of, I think, biomimicry, which is a term that's kind of used in some like geoengineering and sustainable development disciplines, but it's an amazing concept, and especially for these very, very tiny particles, what happens is the plastics just get smaller and smaller and then are filtered up through the food chain. They don't decompose or metabolize in the fish or smaller organisms, and then are then found in larger and larger quantities as they go up the food chain, ultimately to us. So the larger pieces, in an industrial scale, throwing a bottle into a vat and having it be a sort of remediated into its component parts is an amazing thing. But these areas that are, natural habitats and places where, real wildlife is affected by unnatural and artificial substances in the wetlands and other feeding areas, that I think is the most important, I think, or harrowing use, because you're really affecting species who otherwise wouldn't stumble into this stuff in their everyday sort of habitats.
They say other types of plastic could be broken down by bacteria currently evolving in the environment. People are now searching vigorously for those. The plastic in question sinks in seawater, but some scientists have conjectured, and this kind of sounds a little scary, the plastic-eating bugs might one day be sprayed on the huge plastic garbage patches in the oceans to clean them up. That sounds good, but I'm a little worried about these plastic-eating bugs.
I think
maybe they'll keep eating everything. And
yeah, I think that the actual implementation will be a combination of these sort of natural methods with mechanical processing techniques, like something that maybe digs up the Pacific gyre of and puts it onto some barge that can process it remotely into something that can then be reintroduced into the environment, or removed and reintroduced in a simulated environment where it can further processed. But it's going to be a combination of these technologies to actually fix that directly. I don't think just dumping 50 gallon drums of stuff or spraying it overhead is really a sound solution. You really have to kind of design a process that makes more that makes use of every thing.
Oliver Jones is a chemist in Melbourne, Australia, not part of this research team, but he says enzymes are non-toxic, biodegradable, can be produced in large amounts by microorganisms. Still a long way to go before you could recycle large amounts of plastic with enzymes, and reducing the amount of plastic produced in the first place might perhaps be preferable, but this is certainly a step in a positive direction. It's so good to hear that. And the professor Adiza Azabajic at the University of Manchester in the UK agreed the enzyme could be useful, but added a full life cycle assessment would be needed to ensure the technology does not solve one environmental problem at the expense of others. Like additional greenhouse gas emissions, things like that.
Right.
So this is something that's we're learning about, but solutions are possible.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, a mechanical method, well, that's fine. You can't deny that, some mechanical components of processing are necessary, but you don't want to make it so that it's traveling thousands of miles or being processed in places that you're gonna have to burn a bunch of carbon to get it located properly. All that, those things are I think part of what people will be working on to actually come up with a good process.
Well, anyway, so
it's fascinating.
That's the bit of optimistic news. Now, the bit of pessimistic news was that we almost got hit by an asteroid. An asteroid the size of a football field buzzed by Earth on Sunday, and one of the closest encounters the planet has seen in a while. At its closest point, the asteroid, which you might know as 2018 GE3, was just 110,000 miles. Actually, no, it's 119,500 miles away from the Earth's atmosphere, which is about half the distance between Earth and the Moon. That's according to NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies. And that must be a fun office to hang out in. because they're always looking for things approaching the Earth. The estimated diameter of the space rock ranged from 131 to 328 feet. Now, that's nothing compared to asteroids that make up the asteroid belt, obviously, but those are staying in the asteroid belt. They're not coming near us. They can be 580 miles across. The 2018 GE3 asteroid was discovered just one day before it skimmed past Earth in what scientists are calling a surprise flyby. So when you think about that, you know, okay, that one happened to miss us, but we'd probably have one day's notice for one that's going directly towards us.
Yeah.
What would you do? I mean, what are you supposed to do? I've seen all the movies, you know, you load everything into your trunk and you drive somewhere, but...
That's a good one. Go see a movie.
Well, yeah, but not that kind of movie. A different kind of movie, maybe.
Okay.
The one that flew by on Sunday was about six times the size of the meteor that exploded over Russia's Ural Mountains back in February 2013. Remember that?
That
one
made a big loud noise,
big
and
bang,
had a shockwave that blew out all the windows.
Yes.
So imagine
1,100 people got injured.
Yeah. Wow.
By broken glass, mostly.
Goodness.
They say it might make you feel better or worse to know that asteroids enter Earth's atmosphere unnoticed on a fairly regular basis. That makes me feel worse, actually. Yeah, it doesn't make me feel better. Why would that make me feel better? Asteroids are constantly entering the Earth's atmosphere, and we don't know where they're going to wind up. Just, you know, one more bit of randomness.
Hey, welcome to space, man.
Yeah, well, I'm on Earth. I'm not in space for, you know, a particular reason.
Yeah, well, guess where Earth is?
I keep forgetting. I think we all keep forgetting.
Yeah, try not to.
Would you like to join the conversation? You can. 631-632-WUSB. Now, that's not the pledge line. 631-632-9872.
The cricket frog, Acris gryllus dorsalis, is the smallest species in the chorus.
Okay. Yeah, that guy's back. The toad guy.
Mm.
Or frog guy. I'm not sure which. But whole bunch... Dozens and dozens and dozens of sounds of frogs and toads. It's the kind of thing you hear only on WUSB.
Mm-hmm.
631-632-WUSB. If you want to pledge, please join the people who have called in so far. 631-632-6901. Please keep this radio station going and all the different things that we talk about.
Yeah, like what you're going to grow in your garden. It's springtime. Yeah, it's trying. It's going to be spring soon.
Yeah, what's going on? It's not spring enough.
Yeah, it's sort of spring. But if you have an interesting idea for vegetables or flowers, I was going to, you know, do a whole bunch of flowers that attracted butterflies. But then I was like, well, what happens if a whole bunch of butterflies start hanging out around your place? You know, you might be attacking. You might be just inundated with butterflies, and then what? You know, you careful what you wish for, that whole thing.
Well, I can think of a lot worse things than being inundated by butterflies.
Yeah. So then I started thinking about vegetables. You know, vegetables are a little less daunting, but yeah, it's getting warm, and it's time to get your plants in and be ready for that spring and summer growing season.
Well, yeah, you know, there are people you know, get ready for this in February. You know, they start planting things way, you know, in the middle of winter.
Yeah, I would say there's a variation. I mean, some people are a little later. Some people like to get a nice jump on it. But I bet there's some green thumbs out there in Radio Land that are planting all sorts of things and excited. It's been wet. There's been rain. That's good. That's good. I've been seeing some tulips and, you know, green shoots coming up and... various branches starting to look like they've got buds and flowers starting. So it's there. It's coming. And the sun, boy, the light is so intense. I saw a little bit of it today, and wow.
You saw a little bit of the light today?
Yeah, well, it just hit in certain ways, and it was just really vibrant.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what keeps it all going.
I actually was out... And I was tying up some vines and some rose vines. I guess it's some kind of rose bush or something. But I made sure that it wasn't laying on the ground, you know, and looking at all these things. It's great to see the transformation out there. So, yeah, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Tell us about your peppers and your radishes.
Yeah.
I or like not. About maybe that. Maybe no, you mean, go to Chick-fil-A. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. That's, yeah. But growing things is definitely something that I think we should be doing more of. And the fact that we can grow things is awesome, you know?
It's a relaxing pastime, and it's in our roots.
yeah, absolutely. What else? What else has been happening?
Jeez, that was sort of on my mind. Is yeah, beautiful natural transformation of seasons.
You know, we haven't talked about any of the craziness.
Campuses. What craziness? Well, on campus? Off campus? What are we doing?
Well, I don't know much about on-campus craziness, but off-campus craziness...
There's got to be something.
Well, you know, all the yeah. Basically, lawyers being investigated for criminal activity, you know, that happened to be the lawyer of the president and things
Can
like that.
Can you believe...
No, I don't believe it. I do believe it, but I can't believe it. You know,
I almost forgot. We almost had an entire show where we didn't think or talk about any of that.
I didn't want people to think we were in a bubble and we didn't know what was going on. You know,
talk about shoe dropping, the chickens roosting. It's like everything all at once. We're not in Kansas anymore. Just all of it. You can't even keep up with it.
You can't keep up with it, and you can't even make it up, because whatever you make up will pale in comparison to the reality.
Like the whole this the like Cohen not not being having Hannity on retainer, but Hannity expecting attorney-client privilege.
Okay, let's spell this out for people that might not know what we're talking about. Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer. Was revealed to have had Sean Hannity, the Fox News talk show host, as one of his clients, even though Sean Hannity says that they only talked about real estate, or so I don't know why they just talked about real estate.
Informally.
But apparently he wants to say that he wasn't a client, but also expects attorney-client confidentiality.
Yeah.
You can't have both.
Yeah, talk about A, a double standard, and B, something to hide any.
Yeah, I mean, they're so shady. They are so incredibly shady.
All of them.
It's funny, but it's also not funny.
We saw this 3 years ago. We saw it coming.
And now it's here.
And we've been sitting here blowing hot air about it for 2.5 years. And what? What yet? Is it going to be just the cuffs dragging these people off? I'd love to know. I'm tired of blowing hot air about it. It's nice to sit back and watch.
Uh-huh.
But to what end will we tolerate this? I'm sorry. I'm standing on my chair. I should get off this. Yeah, it is. It's got wheels.
It's a new chair. Let's not ruin it right away.
All right. No, I'm sitting down again. All right. Sorry.
So, yeah. I mean, you say tolerate it. I mean, how we tolerate? We're speaking out. We're doing what we can. But, you know, sometimes I feel like it's not enough. We need to do more. And what will it take? I think, you know, if Trump fires Robert Mueller, that might be enough to set people off finally. But I never know because people always seem to be just content to take it and just see where it goes next. Like they're watching some kind of TV show, not realizing the tremendous harm that's being caused by all this. I mean, think about it. What is actually getting done? It's just one government committee investigating another part of the government. Everyone's just investigating each other, and no actual work is getting done because everybody is incompetent or corrupt. I mean, you know, just look at all the cabinet members and how they're all being seen to be throwing money around like it's, you know, going out of fashion, and just doing all these things that are not in the interest of the public. And we're just accepting it because, yeah, that's how it works. It's not supposed to work that way. And we don't have to accept it. We need to be doing things about it. Thank God there are these investigations happening. Otherwise, we wouldn't be learning all these things. I mean, Comey just put out his book this week, or it hasn't even come out yet, the former FBI head.
It came out at midnight.
This midnight? It's out
now? Yeah.
Oh, we're going to the bookstore.
Yeah.
So basically, his book is out, and of course, that led to all kinds of condemnation from Trump and his ilk. But it's so weird and third worldish to see how quickly somebody is demoted from a position of respect, where basically Trump wanted him to stay on, to the biggest traitor in the history of the country. You know, it's very Orwellian to see somebody's, and it's Stalinist too, to see someone's reputation just completely trashed overnight.
It's like an engineered fall from grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as soon as you start criticizing the people in power, all of a sudden you become persona non grata, and basically threatened with all kinds of things. And if Trump actually had the support of the people and true power, think of the things he could do. If this was the kind of country where people disappeared in the middle of the night and were basically sentenced to long prison terms and tortured and things like that, I'm not saying that kind of thing doesn't happen, but, you know, to the extent that has happened in other corrupt regimes over the course of history, think about what we'd be facing right now. That is the world he wants. That's obviously the world that he's comfortable in. Where people obey him at great peril if they don't. Fortunately, we are standing up as individuals, as organizations, and we need to support that. You know, we need to support dissent on all levels.
Yeah, dissent, people, resist, and stay informed, really.
Say that with some passion. Resist.
Dissent, people.
You sound like a robot. No, you got to pump your fist in the air when you say resist, you know?
Resist.
There you go. That's it.
All right.
Let's, one more time.
Resist.
All right. You can sit down. You don't have to. Okay. That's good. Okay. Thank you, Carl.
But all the spending, like the whole Scott Pruitt stuff, is all about like protecting the like shell of corruption, and it's undeserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, we have more to say about this, but
we could go on and on.
But just a couple of things to point out. One is that fundraising phone number again, 631-632-6901. Keep WUSB going, so that we can have discussions like this and basically hear from our listeners as well. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, and tell us your thoughts. And you can also tune in again next week at 6 p.m. when we'll be doing this all over again.
Yes. Write us about your garden or your lack of a garden.
Yes. We want to hear from you. Until then, this is Emmanuel and Kyle.
Bye.
9, decreasing 6 in Humber later. Rain, then showers. Moderate or poor becoming good. Southwesterly 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9.
At the third stroke, it will be 11, 24, and 50 seconds. At the third stroke, it will be 11, 25.
This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.
At the third stroke, it will be 8, 4, 5, 5,
otherwise variable 4, mainly normally in southeast.
A happy new year to you.
At the third stroke, it will be 11, 25, precisely.
Good night, everyone.
Lie with me now. Under lemon tree skies, show me the shy, slow smile you keep hidden by warm brown eyes. Catch the sweet hover of lips just barely apart, and wonder at love's sweet ache and the wild beat of my heart. Thank you. at the sea. Wading it through dreams, up to our knees, in warm ocean swells, while bathing bells sound beneath heart-bitten shells. Punch their iPhones, erasing the numbers of redundant lovers, and search the horizon. And you'll find my child down by the shore, digging around for a chamber bone, searching the sand for a relic washed up by the sea.
Kids, we're not going to wait for the entire theme song to get through, the theme to The Prisoner, because we have a couple of very, very special guests in the studio, have some limited time this evening. Our friends Wendy and Barbara from the Port Jefferson documentary film series. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Great to have you on board, as always.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
And the series, I understand, is going great. As a matter of fact, a movie I did see, but... I didn't catch with you guys was the Sammy Davis Jr. doc.
Oh, that was
great, right?
Yeah. Wonderful.
It was really wonderful. Really good. So tell us just very briefly, because I know you guys have a schedule, about the Port Jeff doc series. How long has it been going on?
Okay. Well, I was one of the original committee people to start this. I think we're going into our 14th year, and we started out as a very small committee, and we've grown. We've acquired Wendy, who we are, who is just invaluable to us. We couldn't do anything without her.
I've only been here it's going on 4 years, which I can't believe. It seems just like yesterday.
Yeah. And what's the mission of the series, if you want to discuss that a little bit?
Okay, the original mission, and we still hold true to that, is to bring documentaries to an area that's not close to New York City, where our audience can see firsthand new documentaries before they even go out theatrically. And a lot of times these are playing in the city, and people, for whatever reasons, just don't go in to see a movie. And that was the reason why we... And at that time, documentaries were just starting to get recognition.
Right.
Yeah. And we just ran with it.
And it's really the myth, as we've discussed before, the myth of Long Island being the cultural wasteland, because these things exist around us, this great culture on Long Island, and really cool stuff that people think, oh, I don't want to haul all the way into the city to do this, do that, and as you just said, and it's right here.
That's true. And we're very grateful to Stony Brook University because we use them as a resource for professors and students come in to see our films. And it's just, you know, it's taken on a life of its own. And we're very happy with the way it's moving forward.
Yeah. And of course, well, where do they screen the films? They screen in a couple of different places, right?
We screen at Theater 3 in Port Jefferson.
Exclusively this season?
No.
Okay.
Three films were at Theater 3 this season, and four are going to be at the last two, which are coming up, are going to be at the Long Island Museum in Stony Brook.
Which is a great place. Most of our listeners, or a lot of our listeners, have been over there to the Sunday Street series over there, the music series that happens on Sundays. So they're very familiar with the location and what goes on. So it's a beautiful place to see anything. It's a great environment. It's great if the weather is nice to walk around the grounds and actually visit the museum, which is always nice too.
Yes, yeah, it is charming.
So tell us about what is coming up in the next few weeks for the Port Jeff Film Festival.
Okay, well, this coming Monday we are screening the film Love, Cecil, and we have the director, Lisa Immordino Vreeland, coming to speak.
Great.
And we've had her in the past. She's directed and written two other movies, one about her grandmother-in-law, Diana Vreeland, and the other about Peggy Guggenheim. And we've had her both times, and really looking forward to having her join us again.
And she's quite the director.
Some resume. This film that we're going to be showing on Monday, Love, Cecil, is a portrait of Cecil Beaton.
Right.
And I looked up the word aesthete because that is truly who he is or who he was. And an aesthete is a person who professes to have a refined sensitivity toward the beauties of art, music, and nature, and an indifference to practical matters. And that really sums up who he was. Some people loved him, some people really thought he was the biggest snob and so opinionated, but nobody could take away his talent. And that is as a fashion photographer, as a war photographer, and also as a set designer and costume designer for both My Fair Lady and Gigi.
Right.
And as I said, you know, his personality may have offended many, but nobody could take away his talent and his eye for beauty.
Right, he's quite the character.
And yeah. People who may not know who Cecil Beaton was, if you watch The Crown on TV, he is one of the characters in The Crown. So I know I mentioned it to somebody, and he said.
Cool.
He was a fabulous photographer. He photographed the royal family. And many, many movie stars and entertainers as well.
And he migrated through all walks of life. Another interesting thing, you know what I mean? I don't know how much the film is that, but the little bit I know of him is that, you know, he traveled in fashion circles. He traveled in celebrity circles. He traveled in royal circles.
Yes, well, the royal family had actually contacted him to do their portraits at a very low period of his life when he was a persona non grata. He had put in a anti-Semitic slur, whether it was intentional, subliminal, whatever it was, in a feature of Vogue magazine, which was found, and then he just became a person nobody wanted to have anything to do with him. And don't forget, this was during the war years or pre-war years when Nazism in Europe was on the rise.
Right.
And this was a terrible blow to him. And he really couldn't, for the life of him, figure out how he was able to even do something like that, but he did. And he was fired from Vogue. They stopped the publication of that particular volume, and he went through a very, very low period. And then he gets a call from the royal family to about 2 years later to do a portrait of the Queen Mother.
Wow.
And that led to many other portraits of the family. And then after that, he became a little bit more concerned about the war effort. And I guess he also couldn't see himself going back into a fashion field.
Right.
And he devoted himself to the war effort, and he became a very, very well-known war photographer.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating film, and that is screening at the Long Island Museum in Stony Brook on the Monday the 23rd. What time is the show?
Seven.
Okay. And